Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Let's give a little credit where credit's due to, and Brandon would love to get your take on this also. But you know, you'll face teams and you'll see teams that have a unique characteristic, like, oh, they're good at threes, or wow, they really steal the ball, or they don't turn it over. I don't know if I've ever remember covering a team who was so a team, not a player, who is so adept at offensive rebounding. And you heard about that in the lead up, because you know, how many of us like watched a bunch of A&M games this year, right? Like, I don't know. I didn't watch them a bunch. Didn't really have any idea. It was just like, okay, that's kind of a quirky, interesting stat. I bet you they're pretty tough. But then when you actually see it, that is a really cool characteristic for a basketball team. That is like, you know, I'm just sitting there thinking like, huh, does that make Trev and his staff think about, hey, do we really like emphasize that? That is a really cool thing to build your program around. Brandon, I'm curious, being a basketball guy yourself, what did you make of that? What did you make of that trait, hearing about it and then seeing it, and then just kind of considering what it could do for your program if you really focus on it?
Yeah, I talked a little bit with Schmitty and Elijah on Thursday about that, and then included it in the preview on Friday at Counter Read. A&M's offensive rebound rate coming in was the highest since 2014-15, I think. West Virginia was 41.3 in that year, and A&M was at 41.2 going into it. And it's usually a pretty good sign if you can extend possessions that way. You're usually a pretty good team. In the case of A&M, when you looked at their record and you looked at their shooting percentage over the course of the season, it kind of became like their only it's why they were here. Obviously extremely physical, athletically talented, didn't shoot great, but hey, if you get two out of every five misses back and another shot at it, it's kind of a way forward. And you know, these teams like A&M in the NCAA tournament, physical, low possession, always scare me, no matter who they're playing. And they definitely scared me going into this Texas A&M matchup. Like, I didn't love it for Nebraska. That said, not loving the matchup doesn't explain what happened. I mean, a team that shot 28% from three all year doubled that. It shot 56% last night. And to some degree, you know, it's like, what are you going to do? Shot quality does its live regression stats. I tweeted about this. They had this game at halftime just based on the quality of the shots and the people shooting them. 49-44 Nebraska, I think. And wow. I'll tell you, I follow those shot quality numbers pretty closely. All season long, the scenario where you have a team that's down, much less double digits down, but should be leading. Usually, I've watched it happen a lot of times. You get that, you know, regression for both teams, positive for Nebraska and negative for A&M. And that didn't happen last night, of course. The Huskers were plus 10.5 at halftime. So even the like live game lines were saying, okay, this is 14 points down at halftime is a little bit circumstantial, I guess, for lack of a better term. But Nebraska just couldn't quite get over that hump. You know, that stretch right before halftime was – you could tell, like, the score, A&M was just shooting out of its mind, but it got so big at a point that I started to wonder if Nebraska had the chance to even cut it back to something more close to the actual team's quality.
It's Brandon Vogel with us from Counter Read, counterread.com. Excellent write up and look see into the Nebraska and A&M matchup. And a lot of folks in the stream are saying, time to talk some spring ball. How about Husker baseball? And yes, the Husker women survived. We caught the end of that last night. Was out with my wife and some friends, and that got a little funky. But hey, Vogues, how do you remember this team? Is it going to be the PBA magic and the joy? How do you think Nebraska fans will remember this squad? Is it those moments? Is it 17-1 at home? Is it a team that got them back? Or is it that thud last night? And I think we all agree that A&M, man, when they put it together, they're damn, damn good. There's a reason they were picked number one in the SEC preseason.
Yeah, I mean, the PBA moments and the home record, I think, are both good things to hang your hat on with this team in terms of remembering things. I'll remember them for kind of the best thing I think you want one of your teams to be. So if there's a range, and there is for every team, of like, here's how good they could be, here's how bad they could be if things really go south, and usually you fall somewhere, you know, in the middle third there. This team, I think, was as close to being as good as it could be. With the players that they had, with the recent history that they'd had. So that's how I'm going to remember this year's Nebraska basketball team. And you can look at the record, and there's a lot of things that help support that. But in terms of coaching, as disappointing as yet another tournament loss is, you get a couple days away from it. And I think if you honestly sit down and say, hey, did they maximize what they had? For me, the answer is undeniably yes.
When you look into what they have coming back and maybe what they should address in the offseason, so you lose Casey, you lose Wilcher. Am I forgetting anybody there?
You might lose Wilcher. You lose an Alec.
You lose Alec and Casey for sure.
Wilcher has the option to come back. There's a couple different guys with the option to come back. Wilcher has the option to come back. Rink has the option to leave, but he didn't get honored on senior day, so you can read in between the lines there. And especially with how the season ended, maybe he comes back. There's some guys with some decisions to make. The ones we know for sure are Casey and Josiah.
And those were two really key contributors last night in a really tough night. So you're losing some muscle, and you're obviously losing some generational three-point shooting. It would be nice to replace those two things. But what else do you think – what does Fred need to address? Say he has – and there's probably going to be some other attrition. So you have like three slots, right? Let's just say that. What are you trying to fill those three slots with? What characteristics, what types of players does Nebraska need to go after?
Frankie?
Yeah, I mean, part of this is dependent on how they feel about their young bigs, I think. Guys that we haven't seen a ton from yet, but that's the big one. Either it's coming from you off the bench or off of redshirt seasons, or you got to go get some in the transfer portal. I mean, I think they just need more physicality inside, another big, for lack of a better term. Then you're going to need some scoring to help replace Casey. I mean, nobody's going to shoot like him. But maybe you don't need, you know, the pure 3-point shooter. Maybe something closer that could score. I mean, Casey showed he could score at all three levels, even though we think of him as a shooter, but, so I'd say there you need physicality up inside. You need some more scoring to help with what Casey leaves with. And then to one of Elijah's earlier points, it's tough, particularly this time of year, to beat kind of a classic point guard. So I think that would be in the works too.
Yep. And that's what Walter says in the stream, by the way, point guard, point guard, point guard.
I believe Ulis has one more season of eligibility. I don't know if he's going to be allowed to play with, you know, the whole gambling scandal. I don't know what that looks like.
I think he's done his air quote time on it. I mean, he'll be able to play. It's been a year.
What's the over under on whether or not?
Jesus.
Kidding.
How many assists, turnovers? I mean, is that what you're doing?
He did it to himself. All right. We're not.
Alleged.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's probably what they need to address. Is it a situation too, though, where it feels to me like Fred established his program, though? I would not expect Nebraska to take a big step back next year. I think it's reasonable to expect that you're kind of that 20-win-ish team is kind of the bar. And do you think that's reasonable to expect as Trev or as Fred enters year six?
Yeah, I think so. I think when, particularly when you lump in, you know, the last 6 weeks to 2 months of the previous season, that's kind of the level they were at. And if you're going to be at that 20 win level, you know, you're going to kind of be perpetually on the bubble as a major conference team. And I think that's realistic. And I think that's fine for this group. You know, Hoiberg, the way he coaches, you know, there's a high skill level here, and it's starting to take hold. And, you know, for a team like Texas A&M, I think Rutgers is a team that is sort of like that in the Big Ten. It's not the skill that jumps out to me at first and foremost from those teams. It's usually kind of the physicality. And I think there's a link there between being a program that is maybe not the, you know, the top tier in a talent rich area. Like if you're getting guys, so say you're in Texas or you're, you know, in Metro, New York, New Jersey, Philadelphia, that area, the guys who are extremely athletic and extremely skilled, well, they're going to, you know, Kentucky, Duke, whatever. Level below that, though, you still got guys that are extremely athletic, and they often end up at places like Rutgers and A&M, and you put them together, you shoot really well. They become really, really tough to beat. And I don't think Nebraska's just ever going to be that team. So it's interesting to think about, like, what do you do when you come up against those? And we've seen, you know, Nebraska more than held its own overall against those teams. It's just, man, they lost the last one.
I'd like to make a quick note here. I did some research on the Ulis case behind the scenes. The NCAA guidelines were amended after he was initially made ineligible, that if you gambled on teams at your school but not your own team, it was a 1-year suspension. If you did in fact gamble on your own team, it was a permanent loss of ineligibility. I believe Ulis gambled on one or two Iowa events that were not his own team, so he'd assume he would be back next season. If he did gamble on any Iowa basketball games while he was at Iowa, that would be a permanent loss of eligibility. So that's where we're at with Ulis. And with one season of eligibility left, I believe he would be eligible to play next year. So that might be your point guard situation fixed. Not to derail the conversation and take it back, but I did some research and wanted to make sure we had the facts straight there.
Well, and we're getting several comments in the stream, just Nebraska basketball fans post-mortem on the season, just what turned out to be last night, just no answer. Fred put it best. It was a buzzsaw. You know, perfect storm. If you know, where you're wearing maroon and white, and a big time nightmare if you're a Nebraska fan. I want to spend a minute, fellas, and we've covered and gone on road trips a lot in our lifetime, and I want to salute the Nebraska basketball fans, the 8,000 and change that dropped everything and said, let's go to Memphis, get some barbecue, take down as many Coors and Busch Lights as we can, and be there for these fellas. And same with the Nebraska women's fans who made the way to Corvallis. That's what's really cool about getting to cover this football, basketball, baseball, volleyball. I mean, insert team you root for. And the fan base is really cool. Even when I was starting out doing this, the Husker softball fandom that would make their way down to either the Big 12 tournament then at the time or the Women's College World Series was really cool. I mean, that's what's special. That's what's really awesome to see. And you hope your team comes through. But Vogue's support there is really, really impressive. And, you know, as long as you've seen this team and been on the road seeing them, man, it never fails to disappoint.
No, it doesn't. And I mean, particularly for the men's team making their first appearance in 10 years, you know, while we expect Nebraska fans to show up for everything, it's still amazing that, like, you never walk away and be like, I thought it'd be better. It's always yeah, as good or better than you thought it would be. But I mean, I think that's, you know, Hoiberg has the extension now too. That's the piece. There's a piece of that to what happened last night as well. when you only go once every 10 years, and Hoiberg noted this, you know, they were what, two guys that had played in the NCAA tournament before this? Like, it's tough. And, you know, it definitely, towards the end of the first half there, like I said it in our subscriber chat, like Nebraska is on tilt at the moment. They just couldn't get it stopped. And it's, I understand, like, it's really, really hard when a team is just making everything. And you're even, you know, you're not even defending that poorly in terms of the outside shots, at least. And they're still going in. So it's very easy to, or I should say, it's very hard to kind of just stay the course in those situations. I think it's harder in this scenario when you haven't been in there. And, oh, by the way, like, and this is just what it is until it's not, you have inexperience, plus whether you talk about it internally as a team, whether you try to ignore it, you just kind of can't help but absorb it to some degree. You're the only team that has won a tournament game in terms of major school. And, yeah, you know, what's the impact of that for a group that's like, hey, this is cool, we did what we were supposed to, but now you actually got to go and take the next step.
Brandon, with the end of the season now known, Nebraska, another season without a tournament victory, what is the word or phrase you would use to describe this 23-24 basketball season? And I know I'm putting you on the spot here, so you can think about it a little bit. I'll give you some time. I'll just speak some words here into the microphone while Brandon thinks and comes up with a great answer. I'm totally not filling time here by any way, shape,
no,
or form.
I'm trying to think of the right word, which, you know, technically is what it's technically what I do every day, so I should be better at it.
It's really hard though, right?
than I am. I mean, it's definitely, it's back to the idea of, well, maybe the word is maximized, because that's what it is. Like, in terms of a team, like I said, and this kind of is how I tend to view every season. And it's like, you got this range. Like, are you at the top end? Are you maximizing what you have? Are you getting the most out of it? And I think Nebraska absolutely did. So maximized. And honestly, like, as they were talking towards the end of the game there, speaking of filling time, as that game never got really any closer or never felt dangerous for A&M in the second half, mentioning Nebraska finished 12th in, or was picked to finish 12th in the Big Ten, that only lends to it, and also made me think of football as a team that I think has a lot of potential in 2024. It's like, hey, look, we just saw it happen. And it's easy when you get to the point and it's past it and you're like, okay, let's get this first NCAA tournament win. We go back to it and you're like, 12th to here, finish third in the Big Ten. Like, those kind of special seasons happen. And it's a good reminder that this was a special season.
Brandon Vogel with us from CounterRead, CounterRead.com. Folks, couple of minutes here. We'll get you off to your Saturday and full day of basketball that should be awesome. What to get your take on spring football as that gets rolling and underway, and you'll have a lot to write about and tweet about, and we appreciate you doing the show hits as many as you do, but excitement level here. Let's talk about maximizing the spring, and I really think it's cool. Did you ever get into trouble, Vogues, when you made your way to the Capitol lawn to play tug of war?
No, we escaped unscathed, thankfully.
Elijah may have been in trouble from time to time.
Here's what I'm saying. Whenever the football team competes in feats of strength in the Capitol lawn, it's okay. If I do it after a night on O Street, now I'm in trouble. Now I'm going to jail. What's up with that?
great question.
It's who you know.
that's very much true. Excitement level's high. You know, the first objective of any spring football is avoid injuries. Nothing you can do about that, but that kind of tends to be a big piece of the tenor, I think, of how these things go. But you've got the quarterback scenario, which is, even in normal circumstances, is closely watched. But here, I think it's completely merited. And you've got an experienced roster in terms of bringing guys back who played a ton of snaps. But then I think you've got a wide breadth of players who we may not know all that well yet, or may not talk about all that much, that are going to pop up here and become like emerge as factors, potential factors, at least through the spring. So I think it's about as good a setup for spring football as you can have when you got, yep, we know we got the good piece over here and you feel good about what's behind it. It's a young team. So I expect there to be a lot of competition talk throughout. And oh, by the way, you know, kind of in addition to quarterback, probably some reworking on offense. So no shortage of intrigue in terms of potential storylines.
Troy Dannon, you know, the new athletic director, which God, just think about a week ago, fellas, like not even on our radar. And here we are a week later and the dude's already been to, you know, been to Memphis, been to Lincoln, addressed the football team, like got hired. It's just crazy how quickly that thing has moved. Your impressions of him, maybe not of his resume, but in the little that you've heard him speak and, you know, you saw him address the football team, you saw the comments he made about Matt Rhule, just your assessment so far of Dannon and what he appears to be about and, you know, whether or not he seems like a good fit for what Nebraska needs to do.
Yeah, I think in terms of what we've seen from him, the fit piece is kind of what jumps out. He seems kind of like classically Midwestern, you know, what you would expect from a guy who grew up in Iowa, went to Northern Iowa, and then led that program for a good stretch. But since then, went and spent a good stretch too in New Orleans, which is not like Iowa. Time in Seattle was shorter, but Seattle also not like Iowa. So he's been around, and I think there is something to be said for landing back in a place like Nebraska where, okay, this feels, you know, pretty familiar. And he has, you know, aside from, you know, we don't need to go through the resume, that's what we all did middle of the week. He has about the biggest leg up I think you can have as an incoming AD in the football coaches in any danger right now. And what a relief that is for any AD who gets to experience that scenario.
Walter is weighing in. Nebraska had 54 total punt return yards for the entire season last year. They might want to work on that. Walter, we love you. Just south of Philly. So, yeah, who are some candidates to be the next Bobby Newcomb, Joe Walker, or DPE?
Or DeJuan Gross, who's coming back from Jet Awards. He's getting the legacy
good
award.
I love I love DeJuan, man. DeJuan, yeah. I should say. Gross is – how good was he? Oh, right? Yeah. Putting the Superman cape on in that 0-2 season.
Yeah.
Making it a ball game against Texas.
Made those uniforms palatable for a minute.
Yeah. A little bit. At least he got a return and third-round pick, I think, with the Rams.
Rams, yep.
Yep. Do we know for certain if J.D. Spielman used up his last year of eligibility? For some reason, I think he didn't. So
I don't think he did either.
Realistically, Nebraska has plenty of options, I think, though that always seems to be the case. But I think in particular, when you look at how many – well, they may come in as receivers and move to DBs, vice versa, whatever. Nebraska's just brought in so many, like, speedsters and athletes. You would think there's options there if you want to go kind of more specialist route. We saw bless you, Walter, for this question, because we didn't talk about special teams and I would agree.
Sneezing my ass off. That's the other,
you know, issue. Yeah. Yes.
We noticed. Everyone
noticed.
You look at a guy like Tommy Hill, he's obviously been in that role. So you got plenty of options, but it's a big piece of it. I mean, we've had this before where, you know, Nebraska gets special teams coach or all these things. And you hear the talk, particularly around this time of year, of like, yep, we got to make special teams a strength. No, that wasn't the case last year. So we'll see.
They held serve at least, it felt like, you know, it wasn't,
yeah,
wasn't a strength, but the punt return thing is just mind boggling to me. What does need to change? Is it a mentality thing? Is it a coach just saying, just fair catch it thing, and that's what limits everything?
It's an emphasis,
it just baffles
right?
Me. Just baffles me.
It's an emphasis, you know, and, you know, I believe fully in the other coaches when they say, like, look, we want to be aggressive and kick off and punt return. And I should say, that, yes, Mark, to your point, they did hold serve. It's kind of particularly the return games, I think, that stand out. Kickoff, it's like largely circumstantial. Are people going to give you kicks that are even returnable? And I don't know, off the top of my head, 70% of kickoffs probably aren't. So there's that. Punting, you have the opportunity to be a little bit more aggressive there, but I think factor in this as well is just you're in a good punting league. Not to play stereotypes, but you are. So there's that piece of it too. You probably get fewer returnable punts in the Big Ten than you would in the average conference, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so Washington, USC, UCLA, they got to be ready. That's all I want to see from them in their spring games. Just punts, punts, punts. You got to get yourself ready for that Big Ten football.
You think you're ready for the Big Ten physicality, but that's not what gets you. It's the punting. You got to be ready to punt in this league.
Be good at punting, down it inside the 10, get a three and out, flip the field. Easier said than done. More from Walter, minus 17 in turnovers. Walter's, God, he's right on, and that's a issue. And Vogues, a thought here on the quarterback race. I know a lot's been made at Dylan Throwen during pro day, and if you're Nebraska, you have a new quarterbacks coach, and you have work to do on offense where you have options, not only develop an older guy like Harburg, but see what your young pups get. And, you know, there'll be lots of, well, what's going on if Dylan doesn't emerge after spring as the guy, but it still has to play out.
And Brandon, as you evaluate that quarterback battle, do you look into the fact that the two quarterbacks that were throwing on pro day were your two freshmen? Is that something that is in your mind's eye here as you look at the
Harburg battle? May have had a class. Maybe he had a class.
Well, and that's just, I loved that explanation. Well, you know, these guys didn't have class at that point. I mean, it's such a cover. I love it.
maybe what, I mean, what we're joking, but that very well could be true. But I think even if Harburg had been there to throw at pro day, like for me, all signs point to the race right now is between the two true freshmen. I think that's the plan. And that's kind of where we'll go. And you know, they have the option with Harburg, and we'll see what happens as we get towards the end of spring ball and the transfer portal opens, and we'll see if Nebraska sniffs around in there for a quarterback. I suspect that they will. But that's, you know, that's like a 55% lean, not a 75% lean for me. So we'll see. But I think the plan is I think your two freshmen are probably expected to duel it out this spring. That's kind of been the vibe I've gotten.
I see.
Go ahead.
Harburg is like going to play a slash sort of wildcat type role, I think.
Give me the jump pass, baby.
I think the jump pass is going to, let's make that prediction right now on March 23rd. Harburg jump pass on a goal line type situation, touchdown to Fedoni. We'll just say it right now.
We have 23
against Texas A&M in the first round of the college football playoff.
Oh,
good work. Revenge, folks.
Trev can't lose.
At College Station.
Trev can't lose in a situation like that, you know?
You know who does? Instead of Elijah Herbal will lose, because Johnny Manziel will find a way to find Elijah's old tweets and put him on blast right after that game.
It's all right. Mm. Way to work that one in, Elijah.
I'm still mad.
Hey, it works. No, it'll be a replay of 06 where, instead of Mo Purify posterizing, it'll be Malachi Coleman, right?
Jamal Banks.
Jump past the end zone. Vogues, what's
– Banks.
Thank you. Did you just think of that? I love it.
Yeah, I did.
Vogues, what the hell's going on with Cowder Reed, my friend? How can folks subscribe? And what is in store, my friend, this spring and as we move forward here with spring football?
Yeah, that kind of that along with we'll see what happens on Sunday for the Nebraska women, but those two take center stage for now. There's a lot of football stuff I'm kind of excited to dig into that with the AD hire, didn't get to do this weekend plus basketball, and it's here. We'll kind of get the twice weekly drip of practice updates and news, et cetera, which will be interesting and kind of spins you off in different directions. There's some longer term things that I've been looking at too, just with, what Nebraska did last season, like where they need to be better, where they likely can get better. So a lot of football to come for me in the near future, at least.
Bogues, we appreciate you. We'll check in with you next week, and thanks for making time as always this morning with the weekend edition, bud.
Yep. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
Enjoy the madness.